And what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 402 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on our social pages on Facebook and Twitter for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks this week. Got a lot to get to today. It's gonna be a pretty jam-packed episode, all kinds of things to get to with the local teams. We got a draft to look at with the Patriots this past weekend. Celtics are up 3-1 in their playoff series, so we'll get into all the stuff from game four last night. Red Sox had a pretty good weekend in Cleveland, winning 2 out of 3. Revolution have won 3 in a row with a good win this weekend on the road in Charlotte. Got some Bruins stuff to get to. There's some interesting news that may involve the Bruins that broke this morning. So we got some kind of Bruins stuff to talk about, and then we got some playoff updates, some draft stuff as well from this weekend. So all kinds of things to get to today. Obviously, we will have a further breakdown later this week of the Patriots' entire draft class, taking a look at all their draft picks as well as the undrafted free agents that the Patriots have brought in as well. So that will be Friday later this week. Get that out to you folks. But I think obviously we'll get into a lot of the Patriots today and their draft picks. But I think we are going to start with Celtics today. And the Celtics, obviously, big win last night, 107-98, beating the Magic in Orlando. They split down there in Florida, and the Celtics are coming back to the Garden for game five tomorrow night with a 3-1 series lead. So I think, definitely a pretty eventful 2 games down there in Orlando. Celtics going down there Friday with the 2-to-none lead. Magic, I think played really good defensive game on Friday, limiting the Celtics, especially in the second half. Celtics turned the ball over 19 times in that game. Magic do enough late in the game to get the win over the Celtics. Celtics just kind of going cold, and unable to make kind of that last big play down the stretch that, they made a bunch of them last night. But then obviously going into game four, no Jrue Holiday for the second game in a row. I think the Celtics really were pretty steady in this game last night. I think that, standing up to the physicality was better. I think that, Jason Tatum continues to be the Celtics' best player in the series. They got Porzingis going earlier in this game. I think that he was pretty effective despite being, in foul trouble pretty much all night. The Celtics, started the second half with him on the bench, which actually I think ended up being a smart call as Porzingis did pick up his fifth foul at some point in the fourth quarter. I think he only played about 23 minutes in the game last night because he was, in and out of the lineup. Yeah, played 22 minutes last night with the 5 fouls, but 19 points, 5 rebounds, 7 for 14 from the floor. Was much better shooting the ball, and just looked a lot more comfortable in game four. And the Celtics, I think, really needed, a kind of a reliable third scorer in this game. I mean, Derek White also had a good game with 18 points and 7 assists last night. So the Celtics were able to get, good consistent scoring from 4 guys in their starting lineup. Obviously, I think bench points have been hard to come by for the Celtics in this series. Pritchard and Hauser have been pretty quiet, but Hauser did make a couple threes last night, which is good to see. But I think that, this is a series that there's a lot more physicality than I think even I was expecting. I think that going into this series, I was like, okay, Orlando's going to try to play the Celtics, physical, and they're going to try to set the tone. And largely, they've kind of been able to, which is, kind of interesting that it seems like it's the Celtics that throughout this series have had to, adjust to that physicality and adjust to that level. Now, obviously, is it getting to be a little bit too much? Yeah, probably, but I think that the Celtics should be expecting that sort of physicality. And I think, did a much better job of standing up to it last night than they had, I think, in the first three games of the series, that I think they kind of understand now it's just part of the series. And yeah, like the Magic are going to be trying to intimidate the Celtics. Clearly, that's what's been going on. If you've watched, any of this series to, any kind of significant extent, like the Magic are the team that I think clearly are, playing with a chip on their shoulder, trying to prove to the Celtics and the rest of the NBA that they should be taken seriously. I think the Magic this season, had a lot of injuries and people were kind of down on them for the majority of the season, but I think they've played a good series. I think that they've played with that physicality. I think clearly Banchero and Wagner are very good players. And I think it really is just if they can surround them with the right amount of talent, I think they're going to be a very good team in the Eastern Conference for a while. But I think the Celtics in this matchup clearly are the better team. The Magic are trying to do pretty much everything they can to, make this a more physical series, try to knock the Celtics off their game. Doesn't really seem to be working. I think the Celtics really, last night, really finally have caught on to, okay, this is what the Magic are trying to do. How can we match that physicality? How can we stay focused on the game? And I think the big plays that they made down the stretch last night were huge. Peyton Pritchard didn't score in that game last night, but was a plus 11, had a huge offensive rebound in the final couple minutes as the Celtics were able to ice the game from the free throw line. I think that the Celtics, have done a great job, or did a great job last night responding to the physicality by kind of embracing it, going to the free throw line. Jason Tatum, 14 attempts last night. Jaylen Brown, 10 attempts last night. The Celtics, 32 free throw attempts in this game, made 30 free throws. And I think that was kind of what they did so well in game two, that they were able to come back with more of that similar effort in game four, that okay, we're going to attack and attack and attack. And that's what they did. Jaylen Brown at some point, it felt like he was attempting free throws over and over in that third quarter. And I think that he was very good in that third. Tatum took over in the fourth quarter, and the Celtics really played a great kind of gritty team game last night. And I think it shows you that this team continues to just play great after they've lost the game, that they're not going to kind of get down on themselves, have the woe is me routine. That, to be perfectly honest, I was a little concerned with some of the things that they were saying after game three. I think getting maybe too caught up in the officiating and whatnot, but I think that they did a great job responding last night, and I think stayed the course when things got hard. The Magic, I think it several times, went on some big runs, and the Celtics were able to figure it out without needing to call a timeout. And I think certainly calling timeouts is a thing that I think people still get on Joe Mazzulla for. But I think oftentimes when the Celtics are able to work through those big runs, they oftentimes kind of come out better on the other side. And so I think they were able to do that several times. But I'm just so impressed with the game last night by Al Horford, the only starter that didn't really make much of an impact scoring wise, but he had five block shots, six rebounds, two offensive rebounds, a couple of assists, and just elite defense. And it's just such a luxury that the Celtics have to have a guy like Horford that just plays. When he plays with that edge, I almost feel like they're unbeatable, when there's something that goes on in the game that kind of just gives him some added fuel, kind of like the, little skirmish that they had after Wendell Carter, hip checked Derek White, and Al kind of gets up into the face of Wendell Carter. And it just, from that point on, it's like Al is just gonna bring it. And he brought it and just played excellent defense and really just continues to be such like an emotional leader for this team. Despite that, you have guys in this team that are older, more veteran. You know, Jalen and Jason have been through so many playoff battles, but you still have the old wily veteran in Al Horford that, you know, keeps this team together. And it's just such a great emotional leader for this team that it's kind of like he has a way that he's able to, the team kind of goes as he does. So, you know, that's just great to see. But he was great defensively with the five block shots. You know, not a guy that's going to affect the game a lot in terms of his scoring, but still finds ways to be effective. And I think that was the great thing. You know, I touched on Peyton Pritchard, but his defense was outstanding last night. He and Jaylen Brown, I think, did tremendous job with their ball pressure. I thought that was one thing that I wanted to highlight about Peyton, that despite not scoring the ball, you saw him affect the game in so many ways. And obviously the plus 11, he was really good defensively last night. So, you know, really an impressive game for him that, you know, just so impressed with him and his ability to affect games without needing to score. You know, whether it's a big offensive rebound, whether it's great defense, you know, matching up against a Banchero or a Wagner, guys that are much bigger than him, and he wants to take that assignment. So I've been really impressed with his defense in this series. I think Jaylen Brown was key in that third quarter as he started to, you know, guard Banchero and started to kind of be that guy that was going to take on the big defensive assignment, and I think played well as Banchero shot 12 for 32. So really just great defensive performance from the Celtics last night, and got the shots, you know, hit the shots when they needed to. And, you know, Jason was obviously outstanding with the 37 points, 30 points, or more than 30 points in the last two games. And the Celtics have a great chance to close out this series tomorrow night. So I think that you kind of got to expect more of the same from the Magic, that they're going to continue to bring the physicality. Probably are going to continue to push the line. But I think the Celtics, if they can respond with, you know, not taking that stuff too seriously, that they'll be fine. You know, and I know it is hard when the Magic are fouling constantly and they're hard fouling constantly. But I think the Celtics, last night, it kind of seemed like they've started to catch on to what the Magic are trying to do. And they stopped letting it affect their game, stopped letting it get in their heads that it's like, hey, it's just part of the game. You know, this is what, respectfully, this is what a lesser talented team kind of needs to do to feel like they can be competitive in a series like this. But I think the Celtics, with the better mindset, with the more talent, I think should be fine. But I think that they can't expect that game five, the Magic are just going to roll over. You know, this is a Magic team that's not rolled over really once in this series. And I think the Celtics have to continue to kind of expect that things are going to be difficult. And I think it's almost been good for this team that this first round series has been hard. You know, I think it's more difficult than I thought it would be. But I think for this team to want to go on a deep run to hopefully repeat, going through games and series like this is important to show them that, okay, you're probably going to need to work a lot harder than you did for, you know, the title last year when the Celtics, you know, only lost three games on the road to the championship. Now, obviously, we all want them to win every single playoff game. That's always the goal. But I think they and kind of us as fans probably need to realize that this road this year is going to be a lot tougher. And I think already playing a tough, gritty first round series is going to, you know, work wonders for this team down the stretch when they have to play road games in more hostile environments when there's not 70%, you know, Celtics fans in the stands on a road in a road game. You know, when they have to go to, you know, assuming things work out this way, you know, having to play a road game in New York at MSG, playing a road game in Cleveland, or playing a road game in, you know, Oklahoma City, or wherever it is, if the Celtics are able to get to the finals. You know, I think getting wins on the road is huge, and the Celtics, obviously, this season have been outstanding on the road, but obviously really impressed with the bounce back effort last night, and the Celtics will have a chance to clinch the series Tuesday night in Boston. So I think that's going to probably do it for the Celtics. Game five will be an 8:30 start tomorrow night. Not sure why that is. I don't make the schedule, but I don't know, something weird with the schedule. But that is game five tomorrow night. Celtics will have a chance to take the series in five games. As I did briefly mention, MSG and the Knicks are up 3-1 in their playoff series. We'll talk about that later in the program, but the Celtics would be matched up to play the Knicks in the second round if both teams are able to advance. So I think that will likely do it for the Celtics. We're going to get to the Patriots, who continued the draft weekend with adding on quite a few guys to the roster. So obviously, when we reacted to the first round Friday, the Patriots had made the selection of Will Campbell in the first round at fourth overall. And, I think we tried to identify other positions of need for the Patriots and, what other positions they were going to try to address. So I think, overall, before we get into the specific picks, I think the Patriots did do a good job of addressing areas of need and, kind of reloading that talent base, which I think is going to continue to be a process the next few seasons. But I do think that overall, kind of just looking at it, the Patriots did have a very solid draft. Now, obviously, it's, 2 days after it's over, so it's like it's hard to really know the effectiveness of this class. You probably won't be able to tell for at least another year or two. It's kind of just about kind of restocking that player pipeline that I think, definitely continues to be, in need of kind of an overhaul. But I think that they've, added to the talent base, and I think there's reason to be excited about this year's team, I think, already. But now I think after the draft, it's like, okay, there's some real players that they have brought in that I think could be guys that'll be able to help, almost immediately, which I think is always the hope. So I think looking at Will Campbell, he's a guy that probably should be a day one starter, you would think. Patriots used their second round pick on Ohio State running back Travion Henderson. It's one of the guys that I'd highlighted last week as a possible running back target. Henderson, I think, really athletic, a guy that's got good speed, has the ability to run away from linebackers and safeties, and I think gives the Patriots the ability to spell Ramondre Stevenson and kind of slot him in as kind of more of a consistent number two, with Gibson probably being that pass catching running back. And with Josh McDaniels back as offensive coordinator, he does like using multiple running backs. So I think getting a guy like Henderson beefs up the running back position. Certainly Ramondre had the ball security issues last year that I think you're hoping it improves this season. But I think, getting Henderson, who can kind of be another, bell cow type running back, that Stevenson continues to have issues, he can kind of step in, or he can kind of be a complement if Ramondre is able to kind of get back to being the guy that we expect. So certainly the Patriots could have gone in a different direction with a different pick, or with like a different position. But I do think running back was definitely a position that they could use another, talented player, because I think outside of Ramondre Stevenson and Gibson, the Patriots were not, using like JaMychal Hasty, Terrell Jennings, a couple guys that were kind of guys that were, probably not going to make more of an impact beyond a couple games. And, I think Henderson's a guy that you can definitely, plug into that running back room and expect him to give you playing time, or expect to have, or expect that he gets playing time, pretty soon. So happy with that pick. Patriots also, or actually, no, that was the only second round pick they had. Patriots had 2 third round picks on Friday night. I think they traded back later into the third round to take Jared Wilson, the center out of Georgia. Always good to have depth at center. David Andrews retiring. Garrett Bradbury got brought in, but I think having some depth there is going to be good because you had kind of a revolving door at center last year. So I think that that was a smart pick. Kyle Williams was the pick earlier in the third round, the wide receiver out of Washington State. A little bit on the undersized side, but I think a guy that was highlighted as somebody that could play in the slot, but could also play on the outside. So, giving the Patriots some versatility at that wide receiver spot. Now, I know with, the rookies last year that kind of disappointed, I think that they will get an opportunity to kind of prove that that first year was a fluke. But I do think Williams is a guy that could absolutely push for, one of those open receiver spots. Now, I don't know what the receiver room is going to look like. I think at this point, the Patriots kind of have too many guys under contract. So it is possible that you could see somebody get released at some point, before or after training camp or during training camp. So I think definitely there are some guys that, could be a little bit. Should be a little concerned about their job security, but I like the pick for Williams. I think that he gives Drake May another really solid weapon, so that's a good pick. Patriots went defensive for the next couple picks. Fourth round pick they used on Craig Woodson, safety out of California. Joshua Farmer, defensive tackle out of Florida State. And then with their fifth round pick, Patriots got Braden Swinson from LSU. Pretty good player for LSU last year as he led the team in sacks and tackles for loss. So I think the possibility you could see Swinson be a guy that is in addition to that, pass rush room. So I really like that pick in the fifth round. Patriots then drafting Miami kicker Andres Borregales. This sixth round, sixth pick in the sixth round. Patriots only had one kicker on the roster, we think was a practice squad addition. So Borregales, I think, will get every opportunity to be the Patriots starting kicker. And then the Patriots with 3 seventh round picks moved around to bring in some different guys. Marcus Bryant, offensive tackle from Missouri. I think this made a lot of sense for the Patriots to double down at offensive tackle. I think never a bad idea to get more line depth, so I think that's what they go with there. Taking Julian Ashby, long snapper out of Vanderbilt. Yes, you gotta have those long snappers, those special teams guys. So I don't know, kind of a nod to the old Belichick ways of taking some special teams guys. And then the Patriots also taking Kobe Minor out of Memphis with the final pick of the draft in the seventh round. Mr. Irrelevant. So Kobe Minor definitely will get added to that cornerback room. I think that that was a spot that I could see the Patriots adding to, but obviously seventh round pick, final pick in the draft. I don't know if you expect Minor to make the roster necessarily, but I think always good to have depth at that cornerback spot. I think even with Gonzalez, Carlton Davis, Marcus Jones, and Alex Austin, I think it's good to have some guys for depth there. Patriots were also made some additions in the rookie or the undrafted free agents. We'll take a look at those in a moment. But I think overall, pretty pleased with the draft picks, you know, I think really solid additions of players. I think we'll take a look. I'm trying to find the Patriots website. It'll take me a minute, but I think that pleased with it because I think that there are a couple of different guys that could slide in to starting, you know, right away. You know, I think Campbell definitely is going to be the guy that's, I think, obviously going to start at left tackle. I do think that, you know, Henderson, although will probably not, you know, be the starting running back for the Patriots when the season starts, I think we'll definitely will definitely be a guy that gets a good amount of playing time. I think that you can definitely expect that. Okay. Trying to find undrafted free agents. Not having the best of luck right now. You know, Kyle Williams, I think, wouldn't expect that he's like a starter right away, but I think that he's certainly a guy that could, you know, make a move on the roster. I think that Kendrick Bourne is one of those guys that I feel like you could think maybe he's, I don't want to say on his way out, but I think that at this point, you kind of know what Kendrick Bourne is as a wide receiver. And I think the Patriots kind of have more guys on the roster that you're still trying to figure out, you know, what they are in terms of can they be, you know, effective players in the NFL. And not trying to say that Kendrick is not a effective player, effective receiver in the NFL, but I think you look at the younger guys that they have. And I'd even include, you know, or I would include, you know, the two guys you picked last year. I would include Douglas, include Kayshon Booty. I would include, you know, Kyle Williams. That's five guys right there. And I think then you add in Mac Hollins, you add in Stephon Diggs. That's seven guys. Kendrick Bourne, that's eight. And it's like, obviously, you're not going to carry eight wide receivers. But I think if I'm the Patriots, it's like, I feel like it's better to take a chance on some of those younger guys. Now, obviously, you don't want to say, oh, let's have all younger and rookie guys, you know, who don't have a lot of experience. Obviously, experience is important, but I think with the position the Patriots are in, you know, it makes a lot of sense, I think, to prioritize some of those younger guys. So that's why I feel like Kendrick Bourne may not be on the roster when week one happens. That's kind of just the way it feels to me, but could be wrong. But I think it's just, you list off all those young guys, it's like, I'm not sure where the space is going to be for him. So taking a look at some of the, take a look at some of the undrafted free agents, Patriots taking Jack Conley, who's a guard from Boston College. Cam Riley, linebacker from Florida State. Quarterback Ben Woolridge from Louisiana. Not surprised that they took a flyer on a quarterback, maybe just kind of a developmental guy. Running back Lan Larrison from UC Davis. Fullback Brock Lampe from Northern Illinois. Now I feel like that could be a guy that makes the roster, you know, the Patriots in there, you know, streak of undrafted rookies making the roster. I think the streak got snapped, but I think he could definitely be a guy that makes the roster. G. Scott from Ohio State, could see him making the roster. He's a tight end, as the Patriots, I think, might want to have some kind of depth at that spot. Patriots also inviting a couple guys to mini camp, including Hector Johnson, who's an edge rusher from Endicott. So Patriots giving some opportunities to some local guys. So I think, you know, taking a look at the Patriots picks, undrafted free agents was kind of just going to be what I was going to do today. But I think on Friday, we'll take a deeper look at the some of the picks, take a look at some of the statistics of some of the guys they picked, and take a look at some undrafted free agents that I think could have a good chance to make the roster. So we'll be able to do that all that on Friday. But I think that's probably it for the Patriots, but I think overall pretty happy with this draft class. I think that there weren't a lot of picks that they made that made you go, oh, I'm not really sure. I think, as I said, they kind of were able to address the needs that they needed to address. And I think, that's all you hope you can do with the draft. Obviously we'll see, how some of these guys perform in the mini camps and all those things before training camp happens in 3 months, but it will definitely come faster than, we even it will be one of those things that comes up really quickly, I think. But I think, again, overall happy with the draft class. So I think we're going to move on, talk a little Red Sox as they wrapped up a series in Cleveland this weekend. They had a rainout on Friday night, but then won or split the doubleheader with Cleveland on Saturday, losing 5-4, and then winning 7-3, and then winning 13-3 yesterday. So the offense really came alive. The Red Sox were great on the base paths as well, making things very uncomfortable for the Guardians. So Red Sox winning the final two games of the series by a combined score of 20-6. They're now 16-14, 2 games back of the Yankees in first place, or 2 games back of the Yankees who are in first place in the AL East. So I think, with this Red Sox team, they're still kind of struggling to find an identity. I think I've had some stretches where they play good baseball and string some wins together, and then, it's just a lot of inconsistency. I think, you looked at where this team was, the 4 straight wins over Tampa Bay, and then the White Sox kind of kept that going with winning that final game of the White Sox series, then the first game of the Mariners series, but then they were unable to get wins in those final two Mariners games, and then losing the first one to the Guardians. So, losing 3 in a row, then bouncing back with 2 in a row. So, it's kind of win two, lose two, win 3 out of 4, win 4 out of 5. It's, just not really been the cleanest start to this Red Sox season. I think obviously with some injuries, some guys in and out of the lineup has had something to do with it. They're trying to incorporate guys back into the team. Brian Bello, for example, I think has assimilated well back into the team, has won his first two starts and pitched very well yesterday. I think pitching a shutout into the sixth inning before the Guardians hit a 3-run home run, but obviously doing enough to get a couple wins for himself. The Red Sox are expecting Lucas Giolito to make his team debut on Wednesday, so that will be good to kind of get him back, as the rotation depth was starting to get tested a little bit. But I think good to kind of get some of that consistency back. But I think really good offensive performances yesterday. Good to see Seydon Rafaela making an impact at 5 RBIs, including a home run last night. I think any kind of offense that you can get from him at this point is key. I think with the Roman Anthony and the young guy that's kind of breathing down his neck, so to speak. So I think, good to see him have a good offensive day. 233, is not anything crazy, but I think it's much better than it was last season. I think that, Christian Campbell continues to impress. He continues to be, I think, the most impressive player on this Red Sox team in the early going of the season. I think just based on expectation, in terms of you really had no idea what you were going to get, but hitting 305 was outstanding. in Sunday's game with, I think it was like 2 for 4, had 4 runs scored, a couple walks, just was all over the place on the base paths. Bennett is hitting 305, 3 home runs, 10 RBIs. Trevor Story, a little bit of a downturn lately. I think he had snapped an 0 for 17 skid. Bregman continues to hit really, really well, leads the team, or is tied for the team lead with 5 home runs, leads the team with 22 RBIs. Jarren Duran, I think, has started to turn it on lately. He had a really good series in Cleveland, was 4 for 6 yesterday. And so I think, offensively, you want him to kind of start picking it up so, he's able to set the table for the other guys offensively. So, I think offensively things are kind of what you would expect. I think pitching defensively needs to be better. Defensively, if the Red Sox continue to kind of have a lot of issues, which is kind of unfortunate because I think you would figure that, they'd be better defensively at this point with, Bregman at third and Story at short. But they've kind of continued to have some of the same issues as they had last year. Casas, I think, is just having a rough start to the season, is not contributing a whole lot defensively and offensively. I think luckily the Red Sox have been able to get good offensive performances from other guys. So it's not like, they're really desperately missing Casas's offense. It'd be nice to see him kind of get it going, but it's not like they desperately need it. I think, good to get the health back in the rotation. I think you've seen Walker Buehler kind of get back into or get into a rhythm. He's pitched well over his last couple starts. I thought that he pitched well in the nightcap on Saturday. And he's now 4-1 with an ERA a little bit over 4, which is obviously a little high, but he's got 4 wins. Has pitched pretty deep into the last couple of games. You've got a couple obviously good starts from Crochet, who's 2-2 with a 1.95 ERA. Tanner Houck, I think, before Saturday's the first game on Saturday, he had had a couple good outings in a row that I think you were kind of starting to feel a little bit better. I think overall he's not had the best start to this season, as he's allowed 25 earned runs and 29 2/3. So obviously that needs to improve. You've seen a couple decent outings from Fitz, but obviously he's dealing with an injury right now. And they bring in Giolito to start Wednesday. We'll see what he looks like. But I think very pleased with Bayo in his first two starts. I think really kind of wasn't sure what to expect, with him missing that much time. With the shoulder, but I think two starts in, it's pretty good. He's pitched 11 innings, 2 wins, 1 quality start. I think you've seen a good start for him, which is good. I think just that consistency with the rotation is going to be important. I feel like the Red Sox have just kind of had a weird kind of clunky start to the season with some of the same issues that they had last year. A lot of high strikeout rate on offense. And then obviously defensively, it's kind of been a mess. But I think, hopefully with the rotation depth kind of coming back to, getting back to normal, that will be kind of a helpful thing for this team. But it's just, odd that it seems like there's just not been a lot of consistency that, you were expecting that this team was going to kind of jump out to a good start. And, they've had, good series at certain points and good stretches of play. But, you really thought at like 14 and 11, they were going to kind of start to make a move in the division, and nothing's really changed. Obviously good to win 2 out of 3 in Cleveland, tough place to play sometimes, but I think for this team to really start to kind of make a move, you need to see more of that consistency. Red Sox will start a 3-game set in Toronto with Garrett Crochet pitching the opener tomorrow, then Giolito obviously pitching On Wednesday, he's had some issues with his rehab starts in Portland and Worcester, so kind of curious to see how that goes over Wednesday night against Toronto. Tanner Houck will take the series finale on Thursday, and then the Red Sox will start a three-game series against the Minnesota Twins at Fenway Friday night. Saturday, Sunday, they'll play some afternoon games. Then they'll have Texas next week, and then they'll have another road trip to Kansas City and Detroit into the middle of May. So, hopefully you can kind of see this team grab some consistency with this road series against Toronto. First time actually played the Blue Jays earlier this month, losing 3 out of 4, winning that final game in Trevor Story walk-off. So we'll see how they do against the Blue Jays in Toronto, their first trip up north this season. So I think that will likely do it for the Red Sox. We are going to talk a little Bruins. I would like to rant a little bit about the whatever the heck that press conference was last week with Cam Neely, Don Sweeney, and Charlie Jacobs. But there is kind of some news this morning that I think definitely is interesting as it pertains to the Bruins. So it was reported this morning that the Pittsburgh Penguins and Mike Sullivan have agreed to part ways, making him an available coach on the coaching market. And I do feel like that there's a very good chance the Bruins will hire Mike Sullivan to be their next coach. Kind of has been a developing take of mine for the last couple of months. But I will say it's not an original take. There have been other people that have suggested the same thing, on the internet. So I'm not going to sit here and take credit for it. But I do think there's a very real possibility that he will be atop the Bruins, head coaching search, and hopefully he can get a fair shake to run the team, before the front office decides to fire him after 3 years. But I know that's kind of the way it goes with coaching in the NHL, but it's just now the Bruins have let go two coaches that almost immediately have found outside success. So it's just a little bit frustrating there. But, I think Mike Sullivan is definitely going to be the Bruins, I think, number one choice to be the head coach next season. So I wouldn't be surprised if that gets done relatively quickly. We'll see what happens. But I know as much as Don Sweeney said that they're going to go through, coaching search, it just seems like that's going to be the most logical choice. Maybe it's a worst kept secret kind of thing, but I fully expect now that Mike Sullivan is no longer with the Penguins, I fully expect that he'll make a return to the Bruins behind the bench next season. Obviously, could change. It's possible that that doesn't happen, but I kind of feel like it's somewhat of a foregone conclusion. But that was very interesting to see that this morning, because I think I was under the impression that he would return, but I guess they choose to part ways, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. So I just would like to kind of just share my thoughts about the press conference last week that, I guess, like whatever that was, whether the front office was actually fielding questions, because it didn't really seem like there was any kind of answering of questions. It was just a defensive, I know more than you kind of thing. And so it just was strange. But, it just seemed like there was a lot of contradictory statements going on where, basically they open up the press conference by talking about, how bad the season was, how embarrassed they were, and how it's unacceptable and that sort of thing. But then any kind of questions about it from the media met with defensiveness and kind of like, how dare you asking how dare you ask us these questions? Bringing up the drafting and, letting go of coaches. And it's just, I don't know, it just seemed like that whole press conference just kind of missed the mark where if you're going to choose to be, showing accountability and saying that, well, it's like you can't then, be kind of, I don't know, dodging questions and being kind of like oddly combative. And it's just like either it's embarrassing and unacceptable or it's not, I don't know, it just was a strange vibe that I think didn't kind of put Bruins fans at ease. It kind of was just seemed to me that it's like, okay, we're keeping things status quo. We're not really, obviously they want to change things and change the roster, but I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence that, everybody is on the same page in that front office. And it just, I don't know, it's very strange. I feel like the Bruins just always have had this way of handling the media the same way. And it's like, I don't know, I just feel like a lot of questions that were asked were fair, legitimate questions, and they're kind of just refusing to answer those questions. And it's just, I don't know, it's a weird vibe. So I just hope that, whoever that coach that comes in next is going to be able to, work effectively with that front office and be able to kind of put together a team that, is going to be a playoff team, be an expected playoff team. So I don't know. I get tired of kind of the same old in those press conferences that it's just more of the same. Nothing really changes. It's just, So yeah, maybe that was not articulated the best way, but it just is a strange vibe, and it's hard to have confidence in this front office when, it just is. You had one of the worst seasons that you've had in a really long time, and it just didn't seem like there was a lot of accountability being taken, despite that kind of being what they started with. So it just, I don't know, it's very strange, but we'll see what happens this offseason. I think the coaching decision will come sooner than later, that the Bruins will try to make that decision, and then whoever that head coach is, they'll try to, build the team the way that the coach kind of wants it to. So if it's Mike Sullivan, if it's somebody else, be interested to see. Greg Cronin, I think, has expressed interest. He was the old coach of the Anaheim Ducks that got let go. So, he's a possible candidate. I would hope that they don't hire a John Tortorella or a Peter Laviolette. Don't think either of those guys would be good fits. I feel like Mike Sullivan kind of makes the most sense, but we will see what happens in the next couple of weeks. So that's it for the Bruins. We're going to take a look at the Revolution, who won their third straight game over the weekend in Charlotte, a place that no team has gotten a point this season. The Revs were able to get all 3 points on the road with a 1-0 win. Carlos Hill with a goal in the 77th minute to give the Revs the 1-0 lead that they would ultimately hold on to. Revs now 4-1-4 on the season with 13 points. Not really a game that the Revs, I think, expected to get points out of, as they were dominated in the possession numbers, 58% to 42%. So lost the possession battle, but made the most with the 4 shots on goal. Carlos Hill scoring in the second half. Then the Revs doing enough to get the win. I think that defensively they've played, continued to play really, really, really good, or very well lately, as they've been able to hold teams scoreless and, give themselves a chance to win. I think that's kind of been one of the changes that I've noticed for this year's team, that I think that additions of, Fofana and Ceballos in particular, on that back line, they've really improved things defensively. And Ivicic has had a good season, made a couple of big saves on Saturday. And I think those three guys in particular, I think, deserve a lot of credit for how much they've stabilized that back line, how much they've stabilized the defense. Ivicic obviously has been in goal, was in goal for the majority of last season, so definitely, I think, a fan of how those things are going. Hill obviously getting the big goal, but I think getting, Campana back into the lineup and healthy has helped the Revolution going with a 3-5-2 formation, playing with two strikers out high as opposed to one. And I think that with Campana coming back into the lineup, being a regular, some of those Revs players can kind of slot into where they would fit naturally. And I think that having Shankalai back in is huge as well, gives them another depth piece in the forward attacking group. But I think that, you're finally seeing this team play the way that you envision them to, a lot better defensively, taking advantage of those goal scoring opportunities. And yeah, I think just playing good all around, playing a good all around game. And I think, getting 3 points on the road against a really good team is a huge way to build confidence. The Revs, I think currently now, if I was to look at the playoff structure, the Revs currently just 1 point out of a playoff spot thanks to winning three in a row. So I think, very pleased with their efforts in the last couple of games as they've won three in a row. I don't know if they won three in a row last season, so they have played three full games without allowing a goal. So kind of going back to that defense, they've really been outstanding. So hopefully that continues. Revs will continue a road trip, continue their road trip as they take on Toronto FC. Saturday at 4:30 will be their next game, so they are on the road again. Revs will not be home until Saturday, May 17th, when they host the San Jose Earthquakes, Bruce Arena, and a couple of former Revolution players on San Jose. So that might make for an interesting game, as the Revs are going to be on the road for quite a bit in the month of May. So I think that's probably going to do it for the Revolution. We're going to get to some playoff notes. We're going to start with the NBA. Damian Lillard left the Bucks loss to the Pacers last night with a possible Achilles injury. Bucks are now down 3-1 in the series. All the games that took place last night, or all the games that took place yesterday, that had a possibility to go to 3-1, all the series went to 3-1. Pacers up on the Bucks, the Timberwolves up on the Lakers after they won both games in Minnesota, 116-113, the final score yesterday. And the Knicks beating the Pistons to go up 3-1, got some help from the officials, absolutely, at the end of that game, where Tim Hardaway Jr. on the Pistons was clearly fouled at the end of the game, but no call. So Knicks get the win by one. They are up 3-1. And then the Celtics obviously up 3-1 with their win last night. I think, yeah, trying to take a look at the other series that are continuing. Cavaliers and the Heat will play tonight, game four of their series. Cavaliers going for the sweep. And then the Rockets and the Warriors at 10 o'clock tonight. In game four, Warriors lead that series 2-1. And then the other two series in the West, the Thunder beating the Grizzlies 117-115 in game four on Saturday. They sweep the series, so they're through to the second round. And then the Nuggets and the Clippers series tied at 2 games apiece. Game five will be tomorrow night at 10. So pretty entertaining series there. Nuggets with the win in game four on Saturday. Aaron Gordon with the putback dunk at the buzzer. Pretty wild game there as the Nuggets blew a, I think they were up by at least 22 in that game, Clippers came back to take the lead, actually, but the Nuggets able to do enough to get the win. So we're going to take a look at some NHL playoff or Stanley Cup playoff notes. As obviously we're mentioning, Mike Sullivan is now a coaching free agent, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Gabriel Landeskog for the Colorado Avalanche returned to his first game in 3 years, or nearly 3 years, in the Avalanche Game 4 win over the Stars. It's a pretty cool story there, as he had been battling injuries for a couple of years. So at the schedule tonight, Game 4 between the Lightning and the Panthers, 7 o'clock start, Florida up 2-1 on the Lightning. And then Colorado and Dallas, that series, game five of that series tonight at 9:30. So take a look at some of the games yesterday. St. Louis beating the Jets 5-1. That series is now tied 2 games apiece. Carolina beating New Jersey 5-2 to take a 3-1 series lead. The Capitals beat the Canadiens 5-2. They also take a 3-1 series lead. And the Oilers beating the Kings in game four, late tying goal, and then winning it in overtime on Leon Draisaitl's overtime winner. So the Oilers now tying the series 2 games apiece with the Kings. The other series, Golden Knights and the Wild, that game is, or that series is 2-2. Game five tomorrow night at 9:30. The Maple Leafs hold a 3-1 lead over the Senators. Game five of that series will be tomorrow night at 7. And then the aforementioned Capitals Canadiens caps up 3-1 with game five Wednesday at 7. Hurricanes and Devils, game five of that series with Carolina up 3-1, will be tomorrow night at 7:30. And then Lightning and Panthers, obviously, game four tonight at 7 with Florida ahead 2-1. So I think we're gonna move on. So just some notes here from the draft, or NFL notes here. The Panthers are adding Hunter Renfrow on a 1-year deal, and it's being reported that Xavier Restrepo, former Miami wide receiver, will be reuniting with Cam Ward on the Titans, as he's expected to sign an undrafted free agent deal. So I think taking a look at the rest of the draft, I think really the only other story was Shedeur Sanders falling all the way to the fifth round. I'll be honest, I'm still kind of not really sure what that was about. In terms of him falling as much as he did, I think that the talent and the skills are there. Maybe there's something else going on, but I just it was very odd that he fell all as much as he did. I fully expect that he's kind of going to be that guy that probably takes command in that quarterback room in Cleveland. I think that Browns are probably trying to do everything they can to get out of the Deshaun Watson situation. So I kind of fully expect that Sanders is going to be that starter at some point this season. That might sound crazy, but I think I expect that he's going to beat out everybody else in that room. It is kind of a wild room with Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, Watson, obviously, and Dylan Gabriel, with the Browns oddly drafted earlier on Saturday. So, no, it'll be interesting to see. But I think really, not a whole lot of serious surprises in this draft. I think that things kind of went close to how I thought they would. It's funny to see the Patriots end up with the final pick in the draft, Kobe Meiner from Memphis. So it'd be interesting to see, what his career has in store, if anything. So I think that's probably it for the NFL. We're going to take a quick look at the MLB standings before we do the top five. The Yankees first place in the AL East with a two-game lead over the Red Sox. The Red Sox are right there, right behind the Yankees for first place. In the Central, the Tigers lead by 2.5 games over the Guardians. And the Mariners lead in the West by a game over the Rangers. In the National League, you have the Mets still setting the pace in the National League East. They actually have the best record in baseball right now at 19-9. They have a 4-game lead over the Phillies. Cubs in first place in the Central by a game and a half over the Reds. And then you have the Giants first place in the National League West, half game lead over the Dodgers. So I think it's going to do it for the sports this week. We got a good top five for you as we are kind of approaching the warmer weather in the summer months. I thought that today would be a good time to do my top five ice cream flavors. Now, I had some ice cream over the weekend. Kind of got me thinking that, oh, you know, be a good time to put out my my favorite ice cream flavor. So that's what we're going to do. You know, maybe it's a little early, you know, late April, you know, usually around here. Ice cream time is not for a couple more weeks, but I figure, you know, let's get out ahead of this. So number one for me, this is a pretty easy decision. It's strawberry. You know, that's the flavor that I go with pretty much anytime I go out to get ice cream. As you may have remembered, as I mentioned, one of my favorite things to do in the spring is go to get ice cream at Erickson's, which is a great ice cream place in Maynard, Massachusetts. They have, I don't know what they do, but their strawberry is just unbelievable. So that's usually what I will always get when I go out there. But I think it's just, for me, it's just the best flavor. It's just an easy, easy flavor, no nonsense. You know, usually ice cream with me is pretty simple. I don't really delve out into any crazy flavors, although, you know, we'll see as we get further down this list. But strawberry, I think for me, is easily my number one favorite. Get it all the time. You know, I'll be honest, I've never met a strawberry ice cream that I didn't like. So, you know, I think that's a safe number one for me. Number two, I went cookies and cream. I think that's pretty standard favorite for a lot of people. You know, I think it's just Oreos and ice cream. I mean, what kind of, there's not really a better combination than that. So I would say that's an easy number two. Actually, I want to mention one last little bit about strawberry. I think that any strawberry that you have with actual chunks of strawberry, that's also a huge plus for me. So strawberry number one, cookies and cream number two. Number three, gotta go vanilla. I know that that might be a crazy take, but I think vanilla is just nice and easy, simple. You know, it's definitely a no-nonsense kind of flavor. You know, people probably debate chocolate and vanilla till the cows come home, but I think vanilla for me, it's just better flavor in my opinion. I'm not a huge chocolate person, so that might have something to do with it, but I think vanilla is a pretty good number three. Number four, this is where we're getting a little crazy, but I do enjoy mint chocolate chip. That's kind of an out there flavor, but definitely that had to go on my list. Big fan of the mint flavor. You know, obviously love chocolate chips, so I think that's a good number four. Number five, this is going to be the wildest thing that I'll say, but raspberry sherbet, huge fan of sherbet. I know that's not, you could say, oh, it's not really ice cream, but it's solid. We always used to have that often in my house, so would like to periodically, you know, dip into that. It's funny, I don't feel like I've tried too many ice cream flavors, but had to have that in there, just a nice change of pace as, you know, just a good flavor profile there. So I think that's probably it for the top five. I know sometimes I do an honorable mention, but I don't think I really would list any other flavors as like flavors that I, you know, eat often. You know, maybe you could say like a coffee or like a Moose Tracks, but it's just like, don't think I really have those very often. So pretty happy with that top five, but obviously would be interested to know other people's top fives as well. But I think that's going to probably do it for me this week. Going to have a further breakdown of the Patriots draft class later this week. That'll probably come out for you folks on Friday. So everybody enjoy this episode, and we'll talk to you later this week.